depending on the time it is when you are watching or listening to this week's episode of the Cricket Her Weekly, which is episode 205. Now, Sid, we are recording this actually a few days earlier than usual. It's Thursday, so if anything's happened on Friday, Saturday or Sunday morning, then we won't be talking about it. So sorry about that. We'll have to talk about that breaking news next week. Sid's disappearing off for a skiing holiday. I'm disappearing off to Cardiff for a cricket research conference, which I'm really excited about. So we're recording today. You're just going to have to put up with it, folks. Sorry. But that means that we are on the eve of the Women's Premier League as we're recording this. It hasn't started. Lots of things we say could prove to be nonsense, but we're just going to take that risk, Sid. We're going to throw caution to the wind, aren't we?
Yeah.
So this is our Women's Premier League addition to preview podcast. So Sid, last year we had a couple of teams in the first WPL who were incredibly successful. The two teams in the final, Mumbai Indians and Delhi Capitals. So those two standout teams from last year, how do you see it playing out this year?
Yeah, as you say, last year we had two teams at the top on that finished the ladder stages on 12 points. It was a very evenly spaced table because we then had UP Warriors on 8 points and then two teams at the bottom, both on 4 points. And I think that those two teams on the top, Mumbai Indians and Delhi Capitals, will probably be the ones that end up on top again. That's my prediction. And I think the two teams on the bottom, I'm afraid, are going to be the same two teams as well. So I can see it playing out very much the same kind of way. I mean, you know, it's T20 cricket, anything can happen, all that stuff. And if someone puts on a good run of form, if, you know, Smriti Mandhana decides that she's going to suddenly have the run of form of her life and, you know, hit 700 runs in 5 games, you know, that could all change very easily. But overall, I think that the Mumbai Indians and the Delhi Capitals remain the two strongest teams.
And partly that's because, for example, Mumbai Indians, let's talk about them first because they're the reigning champions. They actually didn't really have to take any risks in the draft, did they? They had the sort of luxury of just being able to kind of wait it out and be very targeted.
Yeah, both those teams didn't do too much work in the draft, particularly on the, you know, on the overseas side. And, you know, Mumbai Indians in particular, they obviously went into the draft going, well, you know, our focus is going to be on finding an international fast bowler. They want to improve their fast bowling. So they brought in Shabnam Ismail, who's, you know, a great signing.
Yeah.
And, you know, someone that's, she hasn't, obviously, she's not playing international cricket anymore, but she's the kind of, she's been playing in South Africa, and she's the kind of, she's a very fit person, so she won't have let her fitness go at all. And, you know, they were able to go into that draft and go, this is what we want. We don't need to worry about kind of balancing that against any other wants that we might want. And we can just focus on that. And that's, so they were able to get, you know, one of the best fast bowlers in the world, and that's going to be their key change.
It's not great news for Izzy Wong, though, necessarily.
Yeah, that's
who's done an interview with Crick Info this week, maybe even just yesterday, talking about how she's really going to try and use WPL to sort of manoeuvre herself back into England contention. John Lewis has also said that he sees WPL as really important for development. But given that they've just hired Ismail, is Wong actually going to get a game?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, obviously, you know, very similar kind of players in a way. I mean, you know, they'll both can hit a few runs quickly,
yeah,
you know, if necessary, but it's that whole thing of they're the players that will come in and bowl fast. And, you know, I just think that probably Ismail was kind of signed as, you know, a replacement for what not... A replacement's probably the wrong word for it, but she was signed to take Wong's place,
okay,
and then Wong will back her up. So I think the Wong only plays probably if Ismail, you know, needs to sit out of some games, if she needs to be rested.
I mean, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because Izzy Wong did have a really good WPL last year.
I think, well, she had a mixed WPL,
okay,
to be fair. I think.
She took a hat-trick.
She took the hat-trick, yeah. I mean, but...
Yeah. That grabbed the headlines,
yeah,
but then between times it was a little bit uneven, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, okay. And I think it's a fair call for them. I think they make themselves a stronger team. I mean, come on, look at it. If you had a choice between playing just one of them in your team, who are you going to pick?
That's it, isn't it? It's no shade on Izzy Wong, but Shabnam Ismail is one of the best fast bowlers in the world. And, you know, we're talking about a team that's led by Charlotte Edwards. She knows how to recruit players that will supplement and complement her team. She does that, and she doesn't make any bones about doing that. So yeah, I think you're right that Mumbai Indians are a very strong outfit indeed. They've obviously got Jilan Goswami as their bowling coach and mentor. And I interviewed her for The Guardian, and that was really interesting to hear her thoughts on basically how the WPL is really just totally shifting the landscape of Indian women's cricket, and it's just so exciting. And I just think a team with those two at the helm is always going to be a very strong team, because you've got so much experience and expertise and knowledge and understanding of the way in which kind of women cricketers' minds work and the way their bodies work, because those two have got what, like 40 years of international cricket between them. I mean, it's ridiculous. Anyway, so yeah, Mumbai Indians looking strong. Their big rivals, Sid, are the Delhi Capitals, who are obviously in the final against them last year. I think those two are playing the opening fixture of the tournament on Friday. So by the time you're watching this, we'll know what's happened there and how that's gone down. But yeah, Delhi Capitals looking strong as well. They've maybe got a problem with having too many good players, which is one of those, it's like, nice problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, that's Alex Capsey's team. And I guess one of the questions is, does Alex Capsey get a game? Because you've got Marizane Kapp and Meg Lanning, you know, providing they're both fit, you'd expect them to play every game.
Yeah.
Then you've got Annabelle Sutherland, who's, you know, very much the woman of the moment.
She absolutely just is.
Hit that 200, the fastest ever, double century in a women's test.
Yeah.
And obviously, as an all-rounder, you know, a big player for these kinds of tournaments,
yeah.
So you think that she gets a game. So, you know, you're then looking at, well, you've got Jess Jonathan, you've got Laura Harris, you've got Alice Capsley, and they're all fighting to try and take that last place, really.
Wow.
And that's really interesting. I mean, Laura Harris is one of those few players that can really turn a game. The key to Laura Harris, she won't do it every time, but she's someone that if you're in trouble, she can actually, one of the few players in the world that can go out and actually turn an in-trouble situation into a match-winning position. So few people can do that. So, you know, that's... And then I'm guessing that Jess Jonathan probably doesn't play most of the games. But
she's been sitting on the bench for Australia, hasn't she?
So. Yeah, well, she's getting a little bit used to it, but maybe building some experience for a future coaching position. So it's between Alice Capsey and Laura Harrison. Will be interesting to see who they go with there.
Yeah, wow, what a decision to make. As I say, one of those that's a nice problem to have. Let's think about the other end of the table from last year's competition. So unfortunately, bringing up the rear were the Gujarat Giants, who have actually had a bit of a clear out, haven't they, in terms of trying to bring in some new personnel?
Yeah, I mean, what they did was obviously they got rid of a lot of their domestic players. They've kept more of the overseas stars, and obviously they'll hope to have Beth Mooney fit this year. But the trouble is that you can get rid of all your domestic players, but who are you going to replace them with? Obviously, you know, your Harmanpreets and your Smriti Mandanas and your Jemmy Rodrigues all got retained.
Exactly,
So Gujarat Giants have wound up with no players that have played more than half of India's T20 games over the past couple of years.
Okay.
So every single player they've got is, you know, like, they've got some players that have played some games for India, but they haven't got any of those big players that are getting picked every time for India, those sort of superstars, because those players weren't available. So I just can see them ending up in a similar sort of situation this year. On the other hand, you know, maybe Beth Mooney and Ash Gardner can do enough just to carry it by themselves. It's very difficult for one player to totally carry it. Two maybe can if they both really hit their stride. You know, Ash Gardner, I sort of feel that Ash Gardner has a little bit to prove in these overseas tournaments.
Okay.
She's tended not to perform quite so well in these situations.
That's really interesting.
She has for Australia. Mm. So, you know, maybe this is when she goes out and proves it. And if Beth Mooney can carry on doing the Beth Mooney things, then...
One thing about the Gujarat Giants that they're kind of up against, and we've seen it in other domestic franchise competitions. For example, in the 100, we saw that Welsh Fire actually really struggled in the first 2 years to sort of get off that bottom stop and step and that bottom end of the table. And actually what it took for Welsh Fire to go from the bottom to the top of the table was a massive shake-up, kind of forced via a very comprehensive draft. You know, actually the ECB, who owned the 100, saying we want a big shake-up because we don't like it being persistently the same teams at the top and the same teams at the bottom, and that worked. So I just feel that in WPL, your risk is for the team who finished last in the first edition is that they then become the perennial losers until the BCCI kind of forces more of a major shake-up of the teams.
Yeah, and they have done it in the past in the men's IPL, haven't they? They have taken that decision. So you think at some point that there will be a near total.
Yeah, I mean, at some point there's potentially going to have to be, because we're at five teams at the moment, and you'd think that they're going to want to expand it eventually.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. And that, obviously that would be the moment to do that total redraft. But I think you're right that, that until that total redraft happens, then, you know, Gujarat Giants are probably going to struggle.
And they have got the only associate player this year, haven't they? So they've signed Catherine Bryce because there's this sort of this rule where it's almost like an associate loophole, because you can play an extra overseas
player,
if they're an associate player. And we saw Tara Norris in the first year of the competition actually having some success in that role,
but not retained.
And we're in a situation where we've still only got one team taking advantage of that associate loophole. So it's very interesting. Do you think they're going to keep this rule?
Well, I mean, they're not stuck with it, but I suspect they will keep the rule.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, it's a great opportunity for Bryce, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
Because I think that she probably will play, because they have got a weakness in their domestic players. You know, and if she can go out there and perform, then, you know, that's great for her. And it gets her more experience, gets Scotland more experience. Obviously, if you're Scotland, you're still always sitting there with Bryce in particular going, well, the trouble is that if she performs too well, then England are going to snatch her. But that's just the risk you have to live with being Scotland, unfortunately. But, good luck to her, and hope she can take advantage of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't see that the associate rule kind of does anyone any harm. And as you say, for some teams and for some players, it's very beneficial. So I guess that it will continue to be there in the background, sort of rumbling along, and some teams may take advantage of it. Anyway, best of luck to Catherine Bryce out there. The other team who struggled in the first year of the competition, Sid, were RCB, Royal Challengers Bangalore. They brought in Kate Cross this time around, which is actually a really interesting signing, given that she isn't a kind of automatic selection for England in the 20 over format, but potentially a bit of a genius signing, right?
Yeah, I mean, is she a little bit of a social media signing?
I mean,
RCB are the social media team. We've seen them do some wacky things on social media over the past week. They've got more hashtags than I've had hot dinners this week. And Kate Cross is someone that's a very high profile player. Even if she's not part of England's regular T20 team. So that boosts their profile, and that's also something that's going to be important for these teams going forward, and I think we're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, I think it could potentially be an inspired signing, because if you're in this early stages of the competition, if you can get that fan base and really develop that, then that's brilliant, and that bodes really well.
I think Kate Cross will wind up selling a lot of shirts potentially.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that potentially was a reason for RCB struggling last year, Sid, was a bit of difficulty with Smriti Mandana being the captain. She's obviously the captain again, and so are they gonna find that tricky, do you think?
I mean, I just don't think that she's really cut out for the captaincy. It's clear that she's going to be the next India captain, and she'll presumably carry on being the captain of RCB, but I don't think she's the best choice, and I think it affects her game, and I don't think it improves anybody else's game. But it's a decision that's been made. You know, they've got to live with it. She's got to live with it. She's got to find a way being the captain and maintaining her game, which, you know, has kind of fallen off a bit over the last year.
I mean, we talked a little bit about this issue last week with Laura Wolfart. The difference is that, if South Africa can find another captain, then Wolfart has a good case to say, look, it's really impacting my game. I feel that in this instance, because of the way the BCCI have selected the captains and kind of gone, we're going to have the most high profile people, our most high profile domestic players as the captains, then that she's kind of stuck with it. And she's got to make the best of it. As you say, she's got to find a way of dealing with it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Mid-table, Sid. The team that we haven't mentioned yet, the UP Warriors, or I always want to call the Up Warriors, which I know is just wrong, but it's just the way my brain works. So the Up Warriors, strong batting lineup. They've signed Danny Wyatt, who really oddly didn't get a gig in year one, and they've also got Jamari Attapattu coming in. So great for them. Yeah. Anything else to say about the UP Warriors?
Well, I mean, they've got, you know, Alyssa Healy's leading them. So, you know, she's, you know, a great player. They've got the best T20 bowler in the world, Sophie Eccleston. So they're their two guaranteed picks.
Yeah.
You know, and then they've got, you know, luxury of, you know, thinking, well, you know, one of Chamari Atapattu or Danny White, you'd think is probably going to be on the bench, for example. Right?
Wow.
What a luxury to have.
Yeah, okay. So let's think about the tournament kind of overall, now that we've been through all the teams. I mean, I guess it's kind of universally viewed as being a really big success in the first year, and a lot of talk about why on earth didn't it happen earlier, given how successful it was in terms of crowd numbers, in terms of eyeballs via broadcast and things like this. Those kind of metrics it's definitely been successful by. I suppose I'm just sort of sat here going, well, what if any, are the kind of risks going into the second year? Do we feel that the WPL as a concept has anything left to prove? What do you think, Sid? Does it have anything left to prove?
I think it does have something to prove, in the sense that it needs to show that it can make itself work over the longer term. I think one key aspect of the whole thing is the fact that we're starting to break out of this sort of almost the one city kind of tournament. Mm. So last year's tournament all took place in Mumbai and in Navi Mumbai. So that's actually two cities, but they're right next to each other. So it's basically one geographical kind of super city, if you like. They've broken out into two cities this year, which makes a difference, but we still haven't gone full home and away, which means it's a challenge for some of those teams to kind of build up local fan bases when they don't have any home games. And that's something that the BCCI definitely need to work towards, because the BCCI want, ultimately, the teams to thrive and to get spectators through the door. BCCI's ultimate aim here is that the television money that they get from all this doesn't fund the teams, it funds the BCCI. The teams fund themselves via sponsorship and, you know, people through the gates and, you know, local deals and things. And then the BCCI take all the TV money. So the BCCI need to work towards that, but it's going to be a challenge to get there. So we've got two cities this year. Are we going to go full home and away next year, or are we going to have three cities? How are they going to work that? And the other thing is that the more cities you're in, the longer the tournament needs to be. Now, why is this important? It's been important because there's been a lot of talk about this international window and the fact that, you know, we've kind of broken through into England's tour of New Zealand, for example. And yet, if we had full home and away programme, the tournament would need to be much longer to allow for the players to travel between A and B. So it needs to be probably a week longer, and it would have been pushed even more into England's tour of New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be this idea.
How long is that window going
to be? There seems to be this idea knocking around that window will be agreed definitively amongst all of the cricket boards. But that perception of events is very much being driven by things that John Lewis has said in defence of the fact that he's going out to coach in it, and some of his players are having to make a decision between staying and going on the New Zealand tour, etc., etc. So he said, very confidently, there's going to be a window next year. And Crick Info did an interview with Nat Siver-Brunt this week where she said, there'll be a window next year. It was just a bit of a weird one this year, having to choose and having to make that decision. But I feel that they're speaking more in hope than in actual anticipation that, you know, somehow all of the world's cricket boards are going to sit down with the BCCI and be like, right, let's hammer out this window, folks. I just can't see the BCCI going for that. I think maybe the BCCI might say, we'll think about a window. But if they want to expand it and make the window bigger, they'll just do it.
Yeah, they will.
I think it's a bit naive for everybody to say that this dilemma that the England players have faced is never going to come up again. That just strikes me as a bit odd. Interesting to see if a window is agreed. Also interesting to see whether that window of agreement is actually stuck to.
And how much that expands. So what are the risks do you see, Raf, potentially with where we are?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we talked about the Gujarat Giants and kind of struggling in terms of success. It's really interesting that the BCCI have got this couple of teams in the tournament who are women's only teams, basically, aren't they? They don't have a corresponding men's cricket franchise. We've seen in England just recently that the ECB have diverted away from that route of having independent standalone women's teams, and they're now going back to a situation where all of the women's teams are going to be totally branded in with the men, because they've decided it's too difficult to develop an independent women's team franchise fan base. So it's very difficult to build up a fan base when you're just a women's team and you're just starting out. So the BCCI are persisting now with this idea of having like the Gujarat Giants as a women's team and not a men's team. I just wonder how successful is that going to be. I feel like quite passionately that I want it to be successful, but at the same time, if you're...
It needs success on the field to make that happen. Yes. And that's what UP Warriors have done. UP Warriors have had a bit more success on the field, yeah. So it feels a bit more solid. I think the risk is that, you know, when we come to that full home and away thing, that there'll be no fans for Gujarat Giants.
Yeah, exactly.
If they've been losing for 3 years,
exactly,
then who's going to want to come out and watch
you
them?
Haven't got your existing men's fan base to peg it onto, and you also haven't got the results on the field. That's exactly right, Sid. So that worries me slightly. And I guess if we're thinking about kind of what maybe represents success in year two of the competition overall, we just need to be a bit cautious that we don't try and run before we can walk with this, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that success, you know, success is repeating what happened last year very much. I mean, it is true that they need to pick up. And, you know, if the BCCI want the franchises to kind of float freely and the BCCI to just take the TV money for themselves and the franchises exist, you know, on their gate receipts and their sponsorships and things, then obviously things do have to take a substantial step up at some point. But I think this year, success is maintaining their momentum. Okay. I don't think we should be looking for them to double their crowds or double their TV audience or anything like that. I think this is about kind of building and not trying to, as you say, run before they can walk.
Yeah. So consolidation.
Yeah.
Because
that's important.
One of the issues, obviously, always with a launch of a competition is that you have great numbers in the first year, and then in the second year, if your numbers go down a bit, it doesn't matter whether your numbers are still really good. The narrative, the media narrative, becomes that you're in decline and that there's a problem and that it's disappointing. And those media narratives are very important, very sticky, very difficult to shake off. So let's hope that we don't have any idea about ticket sales, really. We don't know what it's going to look like. But let's hope that they can at least kind of consolidate where they were in the first year.
Absolutely.
Good. Okay, well, we hope you enjoy WPL this year, and we'll be chatting about it in next week's episode. See you then.
Bye.